So yesterday I woke up and my girlfriend showed me a picture of a theater. It was like they were showing Dune part two, I mean, like at 3 in the morning somewhere.
What? Hell no. Wait.
The wild thing was that it was nearly packed, the theater.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I don't blame them at all.
Yeah, and you could imagine, right? Be like, I'm gonna wake my ass up at 2 in the morning to go watch Dune Part Two before work. What fucking psychopath?
Oh yeah, no, hard pass.
Right?
Yeah, hard pass.
Hey, welcome to Pop Salsa. I'm your host, like always, Joe, accompanied by my good buddy.
Ernesto, it is I. Hello.
It
I'm just gonna say that for now on. It just comes natural.
Today we are gonna talk about Dune Part Two. So just get it out of the way. Spoiler alert, if you don't wanna if you guys haven't seen it yet, just skip this episode. Come back after you guys do, because we're gonna talk as much as we can, as much as we remember, because fuck, this movie was long.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. It was as long as the first one. I don't.
Think it was longer, no? Because like the first one was like 2.5, and this one was pushing 3.
It was pushing 3. Okay, yeah, I'd felt it. It felt
What time
definitely.
did you watch it?
I saw it. I had the opportunity to see it in 70mm in the
Ooh.
Chinese theater at like yesterday, which is it's March 2nd, so
Second,
March 1st.
yeah,
Yeah,
today. So March
yeah,
1st.
around
And
7.
I know that when I think it was Tarantino, right? Tarantino, way back when he was doing the Hateful Eight, he found like some fucking selling old 70mm lens in like some basement in a fucking Hollywood studio or some shit, right? But did you watch Oppenheimer 70mm or no?
No, I didn't. I did not watch it 70mm. No, wait. Did I watch it 70mm? I think I watched it 35.
30, yeah, because
Yeah.
I saw it in IMAX, but it wasn't 70mm. So I'm trying to comprehend, like, is the image that much better? Like what's really the
It's
difference, you know?
it gives it an interesting grain kind of look. Not like artificial film grain, because there were moments where you did see the imperfections in the film. So you would see kind of like hairlines, if that makes any sense, hairlines kind of pop up and stuff like that. It does give it a feel, an old timey-wimey feel to it, because the aspect ratio we had it in was not as wide. It was kind of like, but then again, it's the first time I went to the Chinese theater, so it's like a massive screen. So maybe that was wide. It's huge. It's like, holy crap, and the sound is great. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, there are only a few theaters in, I want to say LA, that could handle the 70 millimeter, right? Like the AMC in Universal Studios, Universal City, that's one of them. The Chinese theater, does the Cinerama Dome, does that still exist? Or
No, I don't think that exists anymore. Yeah.
yeah, like I know that was one of the ones that had like the big giant fucking screen, so
Yeah,
it would
it's
have been
huge.
interesting to be able to watch. Yeah, it
Yeah.
would have been interesting to watch like that. But like Dune Part Two is a movie that I'm not gonna like bullshit you, but like I was kind of surprised on how much I actually liked the first part.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, just be like I remember seeing bits and parts of the Dune, the original Dune back in from the 80s,
Yeah.
like them riding the worm and shit like that. Like that's, obviously something like that you're not gonna forget. But then
Yeah.
like when Dune Part One came out, it was like during the pandemic, and then the director was being all shitty because they decided to release it on streaming and not the theaters.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, come on, dude, how like pretentious do you have to be like, no, I don't want my movie in streaming, I want it in the theaters. But like now after watching it, I was like, all right, I get it. This
Yeah, I'm not familiar with Dune in any source of the word. And what I don't even know how I decided to watch this, because I maybe it was pandemic and I was like, oh yeah, let me watch this film. Or I think it was when we had to review it. I didn't watch it until we had to review it or talk about it the last time we talked about it. Was that Pop
It was
Salsa,
Pop
or
Salsa,
it was Pop Salsa? Okay. Oh, cool. So we're like full circle-ish, kind of
How many
doing it.
times did you see the first one?
About 3 times.
Yeah, me
Yeah,
too.
about 3 times. And I didn't know. I think to say that it was a changing, life-changing moment would undersell it for me. Because
it was the, like, that one scene, right, where the the mom is picking out her maid, and the maid is like a believer, she has a revelation, and she like orgasms.
That was, yeah, that was me. I was like, she knows, or something, like, whatever. Remember that scene? I love that scene. But it's, the thing is, I'm a big sci-fi junkie, right? I want to consume a lot of science fiction stuff. I just love science fiction, the world in it, yada yada yada. So when I watch Dune, it's just like, it's so dense. I love world building. There's so much like technology going on. Like, technology has advanced so far. Like, projectile technology is obsolete. They have to go back to swords. Like, I find that incredibly fascinating. Just how weaponry is used. It's not like wonton, whatever. You know, like explosions and stuff. It's it feels tactical kind of thing. And then
I feel like we went the route of like, let's try to avoid the mass slaughter of our troops and try to like fuck each other up long range. Yeah. They're like, hey, let's incorporate a little bit of both, right? There's an honor in fighting hand to hand, rather than like sniping fuckers. Although that's what they were doing in the beginning of the film.
Yeah, they were. But it's just so... It's great, and I understand that Jordan understands that this film is not for everybody. Because like to us, it's a 10 because it's fits a certain box in our souls that has been empty for a while. So like it's very dense, it's very Shakespearean long, but it just hits that spot. You know, I'm like the lady, like
you said it there, Shakespearean, right? It's like the modern day tragedies. Like, I know these books have been around since who the fuck knows how long, you know, longer than I've been alive. But having the technology, like you look at the bits and pieces of the first Dune, the original Dune from the 80s, and then you look at what Denis Villeneuve did in Dune Part 1 and then in Dune Part 2, where he just incorporated these huge, you know, like what he likes to do with these landscape shots, just building the world, like you said, you know, building the foundation of like, holy shit, this is a lot bigger than, you know, shit that's happening in one town over there, right?
I was talking to a coworker of mine, and we were talking about the first 80s Dune with Lynch and this one, and she was telling me the history of it, and it's considered Dune was one of those unfilmable books. Mm. And I kind of had to try to wrap my head around, like, unfilmable, like, in what way? And thinking about the book, it's like, yeah, she's right. Because, like you said, I wanted to say Dune was after Isaac Asimov with The Foundation. And if you know The Foundation, that established, that was the Tolkien, I want to say, the Tolkien of science fiction, because it established, you know, there can be a space government, by the way. There can be empires that span galaxies, by the way, right? They sent the same as Tolkien made orcs and elves and, you know, like all that good versus evil. Asimov laid the foundation literally for what science fiction would be today. And just seeing that and thinking about Dune being just, you know, proximity to that foundation, like, oh God, that's crazily, you're like, you're reading a tax form from the government, pretty, I feel like you would with Dune or something like that, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up Tolkien, because I'm sitting there watching this movie and thinking, like, is this the modern day Lord of the Rings? Like, you take this book that's so immersive and well loved in the science fiction community, and then you finally have the technology to I don't want to say accurately represent, because that's an impossible task, right? You cannot bring the book exactly, you know, page by page to life in the theaters. But I feel like Denis Villeneuve has done a fantastic adaptation of what he thinks Dune is supposed to be and supposed to look like, right? And I'm thinking, like, are we going to sit back here and think fondly of Dune, the Dune series, as, you know, a lot of people think fondly of The Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, and he made it sexy. Cinematically sexy, because our background is, you know,
production. Talking about Austin Butler.
Yeah, I was Austin Butler. Now I lost or my train of thought. Both. Like, let's see, you know, Fade Rotha, he's psychotic, and then he's like, let's see that tongue, though.
What that tongue do, though.
But, yeah, Dilly, like you said, Denny added cinematography to it, like cinematic energy to it. You know, like you could easily fall back into the spectacle of the technology, falls back into the spectacle of these warring people, you know, the freemen versus basically the colonizers of the day, you know, stuff like that. You can easily, and they do for the most part, but he added some weight to it, right? It's weight to enough for Scorsese to turn, you know, science fiction film, not something that's period piece or anything like that, or Nolan to turn back, because it's like Star Wars, but this was first, obviously. I don't want to piss off our Dune fan, but obviously this was like the caliber of a science fiction epic, and it evokes images of a George Lucas, you know, showing Star Wars to other people, like, and people saying, not people, but, you know, he showed it to directors. Yeah, he showed it to directors, like, what is this? This is not going to sell, right? And I want to say, like, Dune, a science fiction book, I want to say producers are like, well, how is this going to sell? You know, it's like, yeah, it's great. It's great to be a science fiction bro.
Yeah, it's amazing to see, like, what how Denis Villeneuve has incorporated the actual planet Dune as a character itself, and he does that so well by, like what you said, bringing that sexy cinematic, you know, just giant wide landscape shots and building that world. It's just beautiful. Like, and to the layman person, I feel like, I don't want to say like, oh, it goes above their head, because like, I don't know if it does, but I would feel like to the average film goer, stuff like that would just go right above their head. Right. Like,
oh yeah.
Do you get that sense?
Oh yeah. I mean, you're talking about Tolkien, who talked to a random dude on the street, in like Hollywood, like, what do you remember about Lord of the Rings? The walking, like that's what they remember. So when think about Dune, the characters so are big walking. Enough. Yeah, so much walking, like Christopher walking, so much walking. But for Dune, you could think about the cinematic shots. Like, do we really need 3 minutes of dunes, like literal sand, going around, or like 3 minutes of shots like that? You probably don't in a contemporary film, but this is not a contemporary film.
Yeah, this is just as important as like Paul Atreides, you know, drinking the blue liquid and shit like that. Spoilers again, you know, at the top of this, we said it. It's just as important for him to show how, you know, vast and unforgiving the desert is to these people, and how they I don't want to say overcome, but work together with it. You know, they incorporate it. Like that one scene where this is maybe 20 minutes in, and they're finally giving Paul like his trials, right? He's like, you want to be one of us? Then go survive the desert on your own. She liked that.
Yeah.
And I feel like, to me, Stilgar, Javier Bardem was the best character of this film.
Oh.
Like, he would bring the funny when he needed to. Like, that one scene is like Paul's like, I'm no Messiah. I'm just here to learn your ways. And it cuts to Stilgar, and his fucking father's like, yeah, he's just as humble. He's just as humble as the prophet.
He's humble. He's exactly what the mood Liam Al-Dayib would say. Yeah, I love Stilgar. I love him in the first one. I forgot he was in the first one, to be honest with you. Because it was just a wink and you'll miss it kind of scene. Because like, he's there at the middle to meet the dad, if you remember. He's the entourage, Aquaman, James Momoa.
Yeah.
She comes in and brings Duncan him in. Duncan Idaho, and he spits on the table, and they almost kill him. He's like, no, thank you, Stilgar, for the gift of the moisture of your body, or something like that. And yeah, him being that believer and also being Fremen makes it like it's one and the same. You know, there's not really
he's a southerner. You didn't hear his accent.
You didn't hear his accent? Like, no, Shani, I only been here for 5 minutes. I don't know. You have an accent?
I love how you said in the first one, right? He spits on the table and he gives them the moisture because that's their sign of respect, right? And then in the second one, how they treat their fellow Fremen, right? As like, that one dude who fought him at the end of the first movie and he died, right? You see what the process is of him giving his water to the people.
Yes.
And then you're presented with like this giant, I don't know, how many trillions of tons did they say of water?
I don't even know if you can measure it by tons. You can measure it by years. Like, yeah. 100 years worth of dead body of what you like. Like the mom said, like, a bunch of souls, like, so many souls.
So many souls. And, yeah. And then you see, like, the struggle that those people have been going through. Like, it's, and what's funny, though, because, like 10 minutes later or some shit, and this is in the trailer where Paul Atreides is like, your family have been fighting the Harkonnen for decades. Like, mine have been fighting it for generations and shit like that. And really, how many fucking billions of souls of people died to fill up that pool, man?
Yeah. It's like, it's just constant war. And the fact that Stilgar can have a sense of humor during that time is just, yeah, it's crazy. And like you said, even with the scene with the mom at the beginning, Lady Jessica, like, she's about to throw up because she's pregnant, so she's probably morning sickness or, like, she's nauseous or something like that. And she's like, don't waste it. Like, don't waste it or something. And then she throws it up. Yeah. Or when she cries.
Mm-hmm. Don't give your water to the dead or something like that, right? Like,
yeah.
And then what was weird is that he like picked up his tear and like licked it. It's like,
yeah, they're like salty. All right, I guess. Just the way I like my tears. Would it be weird if he, like, when she threw up, like, don't waste it, grabs it.
That would be weird. They run it through, like, the filtration system that they have.
Yeah, so some Fremen comes in with, like, a plastic bag, and it's like a hose to a filtration system or something. Like, yeah, they open here. All right, thanks for your water.
Yeah, and as the movie was progressing, I was thinking, like, didn't they establish in the first part that nothing really lives on the surface of the planet, right? Because it's so hot, and so there's. But then you have, like, that desert mouse, and then birds, like. The fuck?
See, I love. Wait, who says that? I don't quite remember. Is it
the Fremen? I think Fremen, it was when. No. When Duncan Idaho was. Like, when he showed up and he's like, oh, I almost died fighting these people and stuff like that. But nothing is able to live on the planet. So they all live, you know, underground and shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah. See, okay. It's a great. I love that you brought that up. It's perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, the person living in mansions. Who takes one step out into, like, a bad neighborhood and, like, this is hell. And it goes back to, you know, the mansion. So it's like, it's to the outside world or to, it's the same thing in here. It's like when he was doing the sand walk. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I find that interesting. According to the anthropology books I read, sand walking is, you know, like the knowledge of Arrakis is what they read in books and what they experience firsthand. But for someone like Stilgar or even Chani, they've been here for, like, since they were born, and this is just life.
The way of life,
yeah, it's the way of life, and it's hardship is perspective, essentially, right?
I love seeing when they were hiding underneath the sand.
Yeah,
like, how all that was taking place, and I'm like thinking, there's like, can nobody see these, like, black straws?
straws. Yeah, they're not very object.
Discreet.
Not observant.
Yeah.
Look for the black straws. Or maybe it's, like, one of those things where no one survives enough to notice the black straws. Everyone probably gets killed.
You want to talk about, like, guerrilla warfare. Like, this is what these people have. Like, that's their only resort, right? Like, they go in, attack fast and furious, and get out as quickly as they can.
Yeah.
And then, like, there was things where I honestly did not know that there was going to be a part 3.
Really?
Like, I thought it was going to be part 1 and part 2. I mean, like, these movies are almost 3 hours long. It's like, how much more time do you need to tell the story you want to tell?
Yeah. I'm going to forgive your tone right now. I could just say, like, oh my gosh, there's a part 3? Be more excited. Part 2 was so good.
It was good. I'm not going to lie. I thoroughly enjoyed myself. But, like, after, like, hour two, I was like, oh my God.
Go to the restroom before you.
No, it wasn't that. It's just,
oh,
like,
it wasn't that.
Just sitting there just for 3 hours. Like, jeez. And I felt the same way with Oppenheimer. I felt the same way with Endgame. It's like, oh my, should movies really be 3 hours long?
Like, yeah, that's not at all. No. Not like, right? I'd rather not. Everyone gives shit to Avengers. Right, Endgame, and I think it was Endgame, or was it? No, it was Endgame, right? It was the last movie. It was like 3 hours long and shit.
Yeah.
But If I have to go to the restroom in the middle of your film, that's probably it's probably too long, or I just don't have good management of my.
Was it Hateful Eight or one of the mm-hmm. Tarantino films that they were like, "Hey, we're gonna have an intermission"?
Yeah, no. If that breaks my immersion, I can't. Because I'm so laser focused. That's probably why I personally didn't think it was too long, because I was so, like, laser focused into the story and the narrative. Not to say people who are not don't, right? But it's I do feel that time. This is very long. We're barely halfway through. Nothing's happening. Nothing's really happening. But I'm just kind of like, all right, ignore it. Let's see Austin Butler. let's see explosions and stuff.
That scene where it's going to be the gladiator fights, right, where we're introduced to Austin Butler's character, and it's like he's going to fight under our black sun, and it go that transitions from full color to black and white.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful shot right there.
Yeah, it was pretty dope. Hurt my eyes.
I was like more interested, like, what's up with the devil-looking motherfuckers that are protected?
I know, they're like creaking like monsters. Give us that booty or something like that. Yeah, that was weird. It was fairly tame from the first one, because you remember that spider creature eating out of a bowl?
Mm-hmm.
Where it was like, the pet must leave or something like that. And that was weird. But here it's like, it feels like just a bunch of dudes wore weird demon hats and with the cooks and like, just walking around.
I feel like I really like when they brought back what's his face, Josh Brolin's character.
Yeah, a Gurney Halleck. How do I know these names?
You just watched the yesterday.
All right, you're right.
But I feel like he probably I would have liked to see the fight team between him and Batista's character.
Yeah,
Glossu. Yeah, right. A little bit more, you know, like this dude fucked your whole shit up. And
Rabbit.
Then it's going to give.
His name's Rabbit. Glossu.
Well, no, it's Glossu Rabbit.
Oh, that's his first name. Oh, Glossu. Damn.
Yeah, Glossu damn. Rabbit. I have the cast list right here.
Oh, okay. I was like, man, you should have told me that. I was like, color me. Color me impressed. Yeah.
And I just feel like, all right, you know, maybe like, give us 2 less minutes of, you know, big, expansive fucking drone shots. And a little bit more fight scene between these dudes, because like, that satisfying is like for my emperor and for my family, right? At the when he finally stabs him in the throat, but it was like a 20-second fight scene.
Oh man, I'm gonna have to disagree with you. Well, not really disagree. I get it. I definitely get it. But for me personally, we didn't see it to begin with. So I don't have that connection, because we didn't see it in the first one, right? He kind of just charges the lines of the Harkonnen.
Yeah,
the Harkonnen
lost
lines.
In the battle.
Yeah, he gets lost in the battle, and it just kind of I could see, like, come on, let's see more, because he's such a Josh Brolin is great. And he's one of those characters that if he cries, I cry. So I know we're skipping along the movie everywhere, but the my favorite scene in the film is when he does his speech. It's like, this is my father's ducal signet, and then he puts it on, and then like Josh Brolin's face, I was like, oh my god. Yes. Like, I can't
It was the same when in the first one when Duncan Idaho shows up, and then he recognizes that Paul is now the Duke, and immediately my allegiance is to you. And it was that same feeling. I was like, all right, okay, I was raised to follow my Duke, I guess blindly, you could say, and it so happens that now this young pup is my Duke. And then that scene, right, when he's like, when Paul Atreides snaps at him, he's like, that's an order! And then he's like,
yeah, Gurney Halleck. Yeah, he's like, yes, like, my lord. I was like, oh my god. and respect, and blindly, and respect, because I feel like the Atreides, at least their house, is, if you look at a house, Harkonnen, which is arguably the opposite, you know, savagery, not really honorable as much, you know, taking advantage, just this amorphous blob of fat, if you look at the leader. And then you look at Leto Atreides, you know, honor, duty, right? He didn't even marry the wife yet, because I guess it's like, it's something that was politics-wise, or old-fashioned. You know, I mean, like a lot of that stuff. I mean, and curious. He wants to learn about the Fremen. He just doesn't want to rule over. And it's just, yeah, it's Josh Brolin's character tearing up during that scene. Makes me tear up in that scene.
And what's wild is that we found out that they're all like family, right? Like, it's like this weird incest family happening, like very, very royal family type of shit, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
In the first one, when, the father, shit, I blanked on his name.
Yeah, Leto. Oh, Atreides.
Yeah, he gets, paralyzed, right? And then the Duke Hart, whatever the fuck his name is, Bill Skarsgård, Stellan Skarsgård's character, he's like, I give you my hats off to your kitchen cousin, like that. Yeah. Right? He calls him cousin.
Yeah.
And then we turn out that Lady What's-Her-Face is his daughter.
Yeah.
So like at a certain point, motherfuckers have to be like born with extra fingers right?
Yeah. No. Maybe okay. My mind. All right. Just I one direction I could see. It could very well be given the context matter. One direction I could see is it's just a form of like affection, because Filipinos call people uncle and auntie and they're not related.
Yeah.
So maybe like, it's like that
when it's familiar, like, because also in Mexican culture, right? Like
when I
was growing up, all my cousins called my grandma mom.
Yeah.
So like, is it because of the fine family dynamic? Like that we tend to call each other like, oh, he's not my uncle, but he was around, you know, helping raising me, so he's basically like my uncle type of shit, right? Yeah. But like here, I feel like it could be a term of affection, but like, are they actually cousins?
Yeah, we're gonna have to read the book. It could very well be possible, because I mean, House Harkonnen feels like, yeah, this is probably like the Alabama. Like the House Alabama of Dune, just because everyone's like, when we see Austin Butler, it's like, my darlings, feed them their liver, their kidneys. Like, you're eating people? Like, this feels like Deliverance kind of, you know what I mean? It's like, I'd rather not. And then there's like leather straps going on, and like everyone's wearing black. It's just weird. It's just kind of, not saying that Alabama's weird, but it's just, you know, it has that reputation.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird dynamic, and it could be like, oh, you know, because it's supposed to be set in the year 10,000 some shit, right? So maybe somewhere down the line they figure out how to, you know, eliminate genetic mutations because of cousin fucking. But
how
because like they could choose, right? The Bejua sisters, right? Mm. They could choose what gender their baby is, because Lady Ferning, she bangs Austin Butler, and she's like, oh, I'm pregnant, and it's a daughter just as you requested. But Lady What's-Her-Face, when she got pregnant, Lady Jessica, when she got pregnant, she defiantly decided to make a boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, so how does that work, right?
No? Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, maybe. this is what it becomes. It's like science opera, space opera kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's along the lines of, how does the voice work? Like, how does that scientifically work with you? Because at least in Star Wars, it's like midichlorians. You know, we don't want to talk about midichlorians, but it's midichlorians, right? But for here, it's like, just say it. Just say it and it happens. So
Yeah, maybe it's only like the Bejua, what the fuck are they called?
Yeah, Bene Gesserit.
The Bene Gesserits, there you go.
Yeah.
Maybe it's their superpower. Like, only they could use the voice, and only they could choose what gender their baby's going to be.
Yeah, because it feels like they're very shadow government. Not to say shadow government in the year 10,000, but from what...
They're the Dick Cheney.
Yeah, it's because from what she said, at least the Reverend Mother, the older Reverend Mother... the one who orchestrated the assassination of the House Atreides, that there was a Bene Gesserit, like, figure in major positions of power. So there's one in the Emperor, there's one in House Atreides, there's probably one... I don't think there's one in House Harkonnen, because I think Harkonnen and the Emperor are kind of, like, super butt buddies. So you have one Bene Gesserit there. So it feels like they manipulate the whole intergalactic politics for one goal, and it's the Gashashigarash or whatever how you pronounce it, right? Basically they're Jesus, or to make that a thing. But obviously the older Bene Gesserit thinks that not one person should not have that much power, right? And she fears that the one, or the Quikotshakarash, or
I get the sense that every house has a Bene Gesserit, right?
Like, yes, yeah.
That no matter what, big or small, that you have one. Because, like, even on the Dune planet, they had theirs, and the Lady Jessica took over.
Yeah, they had it established before. Like, missionaries went there, laid the foundation for generations enough for it to flourish as a religion in the Fremen culture. So, like, how maneuvering does that even, like, how quick of you know, foresight and planning ahead does that take? It boggles the mind.
Yeah, it's like, it's something that some fucker decided that this is the plan that's going to be, and then generations later they stuck with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody decided, like, hey, is this are we cool, like, what's happening here?
So, okay, my question, what do you think of the Paul and Chani dynamic? I know you saw the trailer the first time around and you're kind of like, that's kind of weird. But now that you've seen it, what do you think?
The issue I'm having more is not with the character itself, is that it's the actress who plays the character.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like Zendaya has no fucking expression other than that sourpuss face of hers. Like, everything that happens, you know what I'm saying? Like, fucking smile. Would it hurt you? God damn it.
But look at where they live. Well, like, yeah, that's a good point. Like, I don't remember.
The other chick, the Shish Kahili, you know, the one that was mocking him, that was making fun of when he first showed up.
She was expressive.
Like, what's up with her? I want to, like, what's her story? Like, I want to know more about her.
She was expressive, yeah. I noticed that from the first one as well. Not Shani, but their performances. I watched it with a friend, and I was so engrossed in world building that she was like, why is everyone a model? Like, everyone has this stern reaction. The only one really who carries is Josh Brolin's character, you know, Duncan Idaho. Jason Momoa's not really the best actor, but when he plays his bro role, he plays the shit out of his bro role. Yeah, so that's more believable too. Yeah, that's, I maybe that's just Fremen don't smile.
So to me, it was like, okay, this has to happen. This is part of the story. Like, would I have wanted it to be, like, for me to be more enticed with that? I was like, yeah, but I just can't. I don't understand why. I don't want to say, like, I don't get why she's a star. Obviously, she's a star for some reason. But for me, it's like, maybe, you know, one more time, you know, another casting call. Let's see who else could have qualified, could have talked to, been able to pull this off. Because, like, in the first one, right, when she's all like, oh, you know, this dude is a good fighter, he's gonna kill you, like, all right, and then he kills him and she's all fucking pissy about it. It's like, the fuck, man. Like, I guess she's your friend, but, like, you're selling me short here, man. Come on.
Yeah, it's it was interesting. I mean, it's I did like the lovey-dovey scenes, because I'm an old woman, like, aw, to be young again, kind of thing. But yeah, when she's full Fremen, it's I could see what you're talking about.
I did like what you said, like the lovey-dovey. It's like him learning from her, you know, like, she's the one teaching him the way, quote unquote, the ways of the desert, is to some extent. But I feel like that sequence was rather quick for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
oh, yeah,
he goes off into the desert and then they come back and it's like, what, nothing happened to him in the desert? Like, Stilgar was telling him about the centipedes and the ghost and the, like, all that shit. Like, we could have been like a quick 2 minutes of him freaking out in the desert by himself or some shit, you know?
Yeah. Oh, God, I'm so conflicted with that now. It's because I feel like that's contemporary storytelling that we are bread and butter, you know, show, not tell, and show us and stuff like that. But with Denny, it's such a footnote in the grander saga of the movie that it's like he doesn't focus on that. Right? He'd rather just kind of, okay, he's training, let's move on. Yeah, so I agree with you. No, I completely agree with you. It's also this is not the I don't feel like this is your typical contemporary film, like Marvel film, or even Nolan, or even Scorsese, because they're very storytelling driven, right? Let's go see I forget the name, but you know, the one they went to eat with, the when they're gonna hide the body in Goodfellas. Like, let's go see that whole conversation. Are they gonna get caught? You know what I mean? And stuff like that. But if it's Danny, it's like, all right, they got the shovel, we're moving on. We don't have to see that and stuff like that. Yeah, it's yeah.
I would have liked to see conflicting. Like, the character he killed. What was his name? Jonas?
Yeah,
him come back as like a force ghost, basically, to like, because actually teach him the ways of the desert, right? Like, I get it that you have to kill or be killed, but there's a lot more to that than you know, when it comes down to it. So it would have been cool to see like a little, you know, quick couple minutes of him, you know, trying to figure out, him freaking out or some shit, and then Jonas comes to him and is like, you know, relax, dude, you have to, you know, keep your wits about you, or else you're gonna die in this desert type of situation. But I was content with him and the what's her fucking name? Chani?
And then that flashback scene. No, he was there technically, if you want to count that, when he was kind
of sort
of speak with me, Chamis, or speak to me, and then he actually spoke to him and <it's> like and told him about it. Yeah. But I wanna know, how does that work though? Like, Chamis is the one supposed to guide him in the ways of the desert, but he's dead, but he's having visions of him. So how does that work? You know, unless it's your mindset being filtered to Chamis, to you, so which is kind of this, like an echo chamber kind of deal. But I don't know.
That's what I was thinking. It was going to be like a manifestation of his consciousness trying to like guide him. There was things that were established in the first movie that they kind of abandoned in the second one. That was like, maybe it would have, if they would have stuck with it a little bit more, like when they were fighting in the first movie, it said like, hey, don't breathe in the spice because it gives off hallucinogenic effects, right? But then when they're fighting like the third half of the film, like the Harkonnen didn't have their masks or the rebreathers on, and those spice all over the place, but you didn't see them like freak out or, you know, anything like that. Like, what's, like, does it only affect a certain people, or what's happening here?
Maybe that has to do with like concentration, because maybe it's diluted, like, you know, because I do feel they do have their masks when they're digging, like when they're doing the dig sites. But when, I guess when it's not a concentrated area, maybe that could be explained like that.
Maybe,
but it's not, because it's in the food too. It's like, how does that work?
It's in everything. The food, the water.
Do other people have, like, you know what I mean, like. It breathe it, because that's what I think. When you breathe it in, it's super concentrated. But when it's diluted in like water or something like that, because if that's the case, then they can dig anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe that's something.
I'm trying not to think about it.
Yeah. You're thinking way too, like, it's not that kind of film, Joel. Because it's you're right. No, you're right. It dances the middle of science fiction and fantasy meaning like The Voice, the Bene Gesserit. Like, how does that work? How does these basically space Jedi nuns, I don't want to call them Jedi because they were not
copyright,
you know, they're copyright. Well, I mean, because Star Wars was copied a lot from Dune, so they're these space nuns who basically have this intergalactic shadow government religion, and people are aware of it. So they take it anyway because they're powerful tools. How does that work? So that, there's a fantasy and there's a science fiction. And if you look less about the science fiction, like, why are they using swords? Like, that kind of defeats the purpose of the film in general.
They had laser fucking bazookas. And they prefer swords.
There's a scene where they're shooting the ornithocopter or orthocopter. And how does that work? But the helicopter, and it's like Chani said that you have to shoot it when it fires. But during the end battle, they're just firing wonton and they're getting hits and they're exploding.
Yeah. Like, could you explain that away with they're being overwhelmed, the defenses?
Well, nothing shot at them yet. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it was flying there. It wasn't firing guns or anything. And then you could see the shield become red and then explode. So, like, how does that, I could see with the sandstorm, because if it's, Well, what, okay, the whole battle at the end is really, like, a huge segment. I don't want to talk about. Is there any other stuff in the back end or the beginning that stuck out to you? Because that whole end battle was...
It kind of... Honestly, I love seeing Christopher Walken, but it bummed me out because he's fucking old.
And you, like, can tell.
Yeah, he's an actor who's been in movies throughout my entire life. Mm-hmm. And then seeing him as this... What, I think he's probably, like, in his... If not 80s, maybe 90s?
I want to say 80s.
80s, right?
Yeah, and I want to say...
It's somebody who's, like... 80s. Who's been, you know, the center? He's 80 years old exactly. He's gonna be 81 yeah. At the end of this month actually. So you see somebody who's been, like, I don't say like clowned on by popular culture because of his acting style and the way he talks and stuff like that, but just seeing him as this role of an emperor, like, of course it's Christopher Walken. Who else are you gonna, Al Pacino? No, fucking Christopher Walken, you know.
Yeah,
but it made me a little sad seeing that he's like on the twilight of his years, which is, you know, it's a bummer.
Yeah, yeah.
The Florence Pugh of it all, I was like, okay, she's in this, I guess.
Yeah,
something pretty to look at, you know?
Yeah, cool. It's a lot like the first movie where you have these characters. Because remember the first one, which is what both of us kind of got pissed off about, is that it teased a whole other movie, and it's like, nope, it's over. Yeah. So it feels like Lawrence Pugh's character is to tease the next movie where it's going to be more imperial centric, more of the whatever planet they're on for the capital.
And there's going to be a fight between her and Chani's.
Yeah. Chani, yeah.
To, for the heart of a Paul.
while he's waiting a holy crusade.
He's sitting on the emperor, on the emperor's throne, watching them fight for his affection. Yeah. It was cool seeing that at the beginning of the film where she's all like, Lady Jessica's like, your father didn't believe in revenge. And he's all like, well, I'm not my father.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Revenge.
Yeah, like, let's go for revenge. Okay, so the scene, not the ending scene, but the scene that I, like, my pants got super loose was when we talked about tight. It. When he addresses the whole Southern delegation or the Southern Fremen.
He just walks in like a boss.
He walks in like a boss, and it's like there's the cleric guy. He's like, oh, you have to kill someone to be able to speak in this circle. And it's like, why would I do that? Why would I deprive the best of us or something? And if you remember, that's what the father said to that guy. I guess he's dead. We never really see him again. But he's basically a human calculator. Mm. And he's like, you remember when there was a Harkonnen sleeper? And they almost killed Paul.
Yeah, he wanted to resign.
Yeah, he wanted to resign. It's like, damn your honor. You want to make this right? Like, do this. So that's what I got from like, oh God, you're your father's son. Like, yeah, why would you smash a dagger? I love that when he went to Fremen, to, I guess, English, to Fremen. Really, I was like, oh my gosh, you're dancing in both worlds.
Yeah.
I love that.
That scene, like, I love when he walks in. He's like, none of you could stand up to me. Like, at all. And everybody draws their blade.
11 like, million Fremen stood up and drew their blade. Like, oh,
and
like,
then how one by not? One, he went fucking telling them their backstory and shit like this to make them believe.
At least I'm naive. I did. I wanted to yell in the theater so much because in the first one, it's not that scene. In the first scene I really like is when he has the visions. And he's in the tent when he inhales spice.
Holy war fought in my name.
Yeah, like fanatical legions praying at the altar of my father's skull. And I was like, yes.
Oh my God, and we saw that in the second one. Oh, Jesus. Like, yeah. First of all, where the fuck did they get that skull?
Yeah, right? It's just a random skull. Like,
yeah. Do they have DNA testing? Like, can they make sure it's genetically his?
I wouldn't put it past them. If they can have galactic approved incest and choosing what the gender
galactic
is.
Encouraged.
Encouraged, yeah, because you can, you know, we can take out the Y and we can add chromosomes, you know, stuff like that. I wouldn't be surprised they found his skull in the bodies and burnt corpses of all the traitors.
What do you think of Lady Jessica Post drinking the water of life?
Post? Like after?
Yeah. Yeah, because like, she drank the water and she's all like, I don't really want to do this because it's going to suck. And then she drank the water and then she basically became a fucking cult leader.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Because if you're blessed with visions of the future and there are, and you can, you becoming a cult leader makes that choices, I don't blame her. But my thing is, it's her being pregnant. Because like the original Reverend Mother's like, what have we done? Oh, she's pregnant. And everyone kind of gasped and was like, is that a bad thing? And then the baby started talking to her. I was like, all right, this is not Galactic approved. We have to talk about that scene. Like, what do you think of Anna Taylor being
oh my god, that's another sister. Actress. I'm like, why is there nobody else?
Why? Like, I love her.
I just feel like she doesn't have like a dynamic range as an actor. Like, I've seen, what was that one movie that she was in, like One Night in Soho or something like that, like that came out a couple years ago. And then she was also in the Mutants. What's it called? Like the chick from New Mutants.
New
Mutants.
Like, oh, I didn't know she was in that one. Yeah.
She played one of the mutants, and there's nothing there. It's like, I would say like a pretty face to look at, but to me, not even that, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah, I guess our acting is as virtual effects. I don't know. I can't tell. Like, I don't know a flat, because when they have bad acting is when they open their mouth for me. Like, if they see something weird and it just knocks me out of the immersion, I'm like, okay, you're a bad actress. But when I look at them and they say their lines, you know, like, I love you. I was like, all right, I'm sold. You know what I mean? I don't. Because I seen her in what's that chess game?
Queen's Gambit.
I seen her in Queen's Gambit, and I really liked her in that one because I could see how she's just stone faced, but the situations that she's given, when there's an ink, like there's very subtle moments of emotion, right? So I don't know then. Yeah, I'm excited. You're a little reluctant. Like on the fence.
I mean, it's the same with like, because she's also in Mad Max, the new one, right? Mm. She's all over that trailer. And I'm like, really? There wasn't another person you guys could have hired? Like, it's weird. And to me, I'm like, I'm thinking back as I'm watching these trailers, like, when did Mad Max become about the Furiosa? Was it always like that? Like,
no, it wasn't. It wasn't. Right? But yeah. But then again, the first movie wasn't a lot about Mad Max. Either.
No, it was like the Road or
it was a Fury. Like it was like Fury Road. Well, not Mel Gibson, because that was like, I was thinking about the one before Mad Max Fury Road.
Fury Road.
Yeah, because this is a prequel to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either way, I'm like, there's more actresses out there who probably could have handled the roles. Yeah, to me, I don't. Yeah, but it was interesting to see a glimpse of what could happen in episode 3 and part 3, with there's probably going to be like a giant time jump, right?
Yeah, there has to be. I mean, they haven't talked about it. So
that was another thing that kind of like threw me off on the film, was like trying to keep in line of the time jumps. Like, how much time has it been since the battle that happened at the end of the first one to where they started off? Like, it feels like almost immediately, right? Because they're still walking with the dead body.
They still have the body. So they have that wrapped up.
But from there on, like, what's the time jump? Like, there's no 3 weeks later, you know, type of shit going on.
Yeah. See, that's your contemporary mind thinking, Joel. That's you. You need your hand-holding. This is not your typical hand-holding. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. But you could also think when they went to sleep, you know, that's a day. You know what I mean? And they woke up, that's another day. So it's like a subtle.
So everything happened in the span of 4 days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Apparently.
He was able to ride the worm. He was able to become one of them.
It brings it all in perspective, doesn't it? Like, you know, Mary Sue here. Something like, yeah. You know, but yeah, it's very, and we've accepted it. It's not really. Because there's no time. It's the same with Star Wars. There wasn't really like 10 years later. Luke's training happens in like a span of a day and he knows everything, but we don't want to think about that in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the big ass battle at the end.
Are we done talking about the speech?
Oh no! Well, let's continue about the speech.
No, it's good. It's
no, like that's. If you got more to say, then what else did you like about the speech?
My pants are very already spent and used. Yeah, it's a good moist. Scene. Out of the
moist. It was. Yeah. It was. This like fucking Timothy Chalamet. I don't know how to say.
What do you think of his? Yeah. Just say Timothy. I can't see
Timothy right either.
Yeah. How do you think of his acting? Yeah.
His acting, I feel like. He's one of these dudes that I want to say, like, because we know that, you know, his family was super rich and shit like that. So I don't want to say, like, his life was super hard. But I just feel like he has a talent. Like, as a person, a persona, I could give two shits about him. But as an actor, I feel like he actually could bring it. Like, he's like, all right, I was born with a silver spoon up my ass, but I want to actually do something.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. He does feel like that kind of actor.
Yeah, like a Leonardo DiCaprio type of actor.
Oh, right on. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. See, God, I don't know, man. But I don't know. Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, I'm more grappling in like what's a good actor, what's a bad actor, and stuff like that. And in my opinion, yeah, he was great in this. Just because when he brought the fury, he brought the fury. Like, you know, like. Dune, and everyone like Misenagaev, and everyone's like he's screaming and framing and telling people,
and it's a pretty tall order for a dude that looks like that, like super skinny and shit like that, to actually command a room.
Yeah,
and you could say, oh, he's acting and whatever, you know, it's all fake, but you know, there's still a gravitas he has to bring, and which I feel like he actually did. Like we joked about how Stilgar was like, oh my god, he's so humble, he's like actually the prophet, but he played it so well. He's I just want to learn your ways, man.
Yeah,
I do not believe in none of this shit. Like I just want to be me. And then slowly, as his character starts coming to the realization that no matter what avenue he takes, this is his path.
Yeah, you know? And if he does, it's gonna, his loved ones are gonna die.
Yeah.
Right, because if you're okay, we'll talk about the final battle. Okay, something went into that. All right, yeah, go on.
I feel like out of the three actors we mentioned, that two of which I'm like on. I feel like Timothy, at least he has the acting ability to be able to just do more than, you know, a sourpuss on the face, or you know, look pretty and shit like that.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Like, I would want to see him in a more challenging role, actually. Not to say that Dune isn't, but, like, there's no, you know, makeup. There's no, like, other shit. Like, you look at fucking what's-his-face, Bradley Cooper, when he played the Elephant Man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something where, like, he contorted his body and he made,
he wants some hardcore method acting, is what...
Yeah, like, I would like to see him in a role like that and see what he could actually pull off as an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, big battle.
Big battle.
Oh my god, that scene was dope.
Yeah,
I wanted more of those. I was like, yes, launch them all the nukes. But they only launched like four, right? Something like that.
All of the grabs, blow up the planet.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's just to set it up. This is the last scene of the film, and essentially Christopher Walken's the last half hour. Right. Yeah. This is after intermission. So, it's a big battle with Paul Atreides laying siege to what the Emperor and Harkonnen forces, I guess. Mm. And that's a huge freaking battle that also ended in a day. So,
It was cool worms. to see, like, him planning, right? You guys flank this way, I'll come in from the right, and then we're going to open up an avenue for the worms. And seeing the fucking worms, dude. Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And like, I would have imagined that they would have just ran through everybody, right? Because, like, how can you actually control a, you know, a fucking Empire State Building that you're writing?
Empire State Building, yeah. Yeah, how do you even get off that thing?
They never really showed. Exactly, that's another thing I wanted to see.
Like, duck and roll.
We saw how they got on. How do you get off?
Yeah, you duck and roll. You just call it.
Roll up. Duck and roll.
Yeah, I just even with the Atreides banner... I guess they made that up in a day, being written in Fremen, right?
To me, it reminded me a lot as the Helgen.
Oh yes, yeah, the colors, like the red, the red,
and even the triangle, fucking the, you know, the whatever the sign was. It looked, I was like, the fuck did they take this? Dennis Villeneuve play Killzone? Is he a fan? Is that his next project? Come on,
man. They just start going down a rabbit hole. That'd be great. Got everything from that scene.
Even when they nuked the mountain. And like when all the rubble was settled, the Harkonnen, they picked up their banners as like a battle cry, right? Yeah. But then they saw the fucking worms coming at them, and they knew they were fucked.
some of the Sardaukar, when they saw the worms standing up, looking at them.
Oh yeah, this is dude with the knife. Like, I'm gonna take him. I can do it. Instead
of running away. Yeah, so all of them pretty much. But just like, this is the heart, because in the first one, like, whoever the Emperor sends us to kill, we'll kill them. You know, they're super hardcore, the Imperial Guard kind of characters. And they see this giant worm from a sand planet, and they're like, screw this.
I didn't sign up for this.
I did not. Like, I didn't even sign up at all. They kidnapped me. you know what I mean? They just...
Yeah.
They ran, and that battle was huge.
It was dope.
Yeah, some directors have issues with making their sequel big, right? I'm looking at you... Patty Jenkins, right? Because it's once people think big, they think like, just make everything super to the nth degree, right? Just make everything humongous. Just make every, from the get go, like, make everything, you know, if the first movie was about interpersonal relationship, make the second one about galactic relationships, you know, like that's the gap. But for here, it feels like Denny didn't wait till the end to make it different from the first one. Because the first one was a pretty big battle within itself. But this one is like three fronts. People, him running with a freaking legion of Fremen running towards like a battle line Shani scene where she's like flipping and stuff like that. Oh, God. And it wasn't even over in the middle. There was still going on at night.
It was cool seeing when he killed Baron. Stellan Skarsgård's character. Yeah. He just stabbed him and watched the life drain from his eyes.
Oh, we saw it. That was horrible.
He just stabbed him in the neck and just watched his life drain from his eyes.
I like that. And then he
could tell that the nephew, the Austin Butler's character, had a huge heart on. He's like, yeah. That fucking psycho.
His character weirds me out a bit sometimes. Not weirds me out, but it's like inconsistent. Because he's he's honor, but he's also a masochist. So like... I don't know, how can you be good and a jackass at the same time? You know, I mean, for it not to be some sort of in hand in hand. Because they say he's a sociopath, but he has a high grade of
respect
honor.
Respect
for honor. And he lights someone on fire. Like, that's honorable. Like, that's great.
That's a dope way to go out, though, right?
What, on fire? No.
Not on fire, as like making the last stand.
Oh, making like last time. Well, yeah.
Yeah, but then they just set your ass on fire.
Until they light your ass on fire.
it was interesting to see, because like there was that side plot where they were like, oh, we need another contingency plan. The Bejewitz sisters, they're like, we need another contingency plan. And then Leia Seydoux's character, she goes and bangs him, right? But he's like, can we control him? And she's like, oh, he's... we could use sex to manipulate him and shit like that. And it's like, really? This motherfucker does not seem like he cares enough about anything. Like, I mean, you saw him when they presented him with his knives and he just started slicing fuckers. Yeah. Like, no, they're not sharp enough.
He did worry about his darlings, though, if you remember.
Yeah. His darlings.
Feed my darlings. My darling, my poor darlings haven't had anything to eat since the flight. Like, what is this? Like, was there no peanuts to give them? Are peanuts illegal?
Complimentary.
He's a complimentary liver or something.
Yeah.
I don't... Yeah, he's... I don't know.
What do you think of the fight scene between him and...
Freaking loved it. I freaking love that there's no sound other than the blades and the reactions. Like, I just... Yeah. I'm replaying it in my head, and I'm loving every second of it.
I kind of wanted him to die, I'm not going to lie. Because if you recall... Yeah, because if you recall when the Emperor was talking to his daughter about, like, what to do with this rebellion... And he's like, what if we had just have him killed? And she's like, no, a prophet grows in power once he dies. So imagine if he would have died the shitstorm that would have fucking...
Oh, yeah. That would be like...
from that.
Yeah, yeah. It would be crazy.
Yeah.
What do you think? Yeah, he powered through within something in his lung.
Stabbed twice.
Yeah, getting stabbed twice. Yeah, it's and I love the reactions because I watched a bit of the last one of Lynch's one, and I found the scene that's the scene of
him and Sting.
Yeah, him and Sting fighting each other, and then Patrick Stewart comes in and is like, "Don't waste your blades on this dog. Let me fight." Or something like that, and then now seeing it with Josh Brolin's character, just seeing the difference between the decades, and I love the reaction when he gets stabbed.
I love
Steel. yeah, and the Steel Guard's like, it was written, I love when he won, and he was like, "Ali said Hagaib," and everyone started.
Fucking Stogar, man. The comedy relief. That dude was hilarious.
He's like, "Whoa, the...
not that big."
Whoa, yeah. Yeah, and with his, he's such a fanboy. He's such a cheerleading fanboy that I freaking love it. because he's just watching the fight and he's like, "Oh, he won, yes. He won." Yeah, everyone's trying.
Oh my god. Yeah. It's I feel like there's a group of these characters that for me are highlights. Like obviously Stilgar is one of them. The Baron von what's his face is also
Vladimir,
cuz they're like cause like how the fuck, like, you got the whole room poisoned and then they somehow figured out how to bring it back. Is there going to be, like, him part three? You know, they recover his body and then immerse him in the goo and then come back.
Well, he has, like, his freaking CPAP machine, like, following him. Which they destroyed. Yeah, which they destroyed, and then he started to die. So maybe it's, like, he needs that respirator now. But, yeah, that's because he didn't need that in the first one, right? He was just a floating
weirdo. It looked like he had, like, it was more elaborate. And maybe here they scaled it down. Mm. You know, to like save money or something. But in the other one, he had like this big chair, you know, a bunch of fucking things attached to him that would make him float. And here we didn't see that. He looked like he was just floating on his own at one point. But yeah, that character's like, all right, let me see. I like how menacing he is. I like how Stellan Skarsgård's playing it. I think that maybe the way he died was like at the feet of the Emperor, you know, like somebody who he's actually afraid of, not because of what the Emperor could do himself, but of the power he wields. I feel like he also went out I want to say like a bitch, but you know,
like that pretty much.
Yeah,
like, yeah, like that. I mean, it's I like the part where he's like uncle and he realizes his, like, this is your fault.
Like, well, he's a grandfather.
Right? Oh, grandfather. All right. Yes, you're right. Yeah, because that's familial lines. Yeah. He's like grandfather, and he's like, oh shit, I did this. Because if he didn't give away Lady Jessica, Paul wouldn't have been born. So it goes back to him, and it's just it's the shock in his face, like, oh shit. Yeah. He gets stabbed in there. Yeah.
I get the sense that Gunnery Halleck, Josh Brolin's character, I feel like he might actually not turn exactly bad, but like, you remember in the first movie, he was like egging on Oscar Isaac's characters, like, we need the power, you know, we need to take like this, and fucking the Duke was like, we need to take a more of a diplomatic approach to this and stuff like that, right? And then here in the second one, when he shows up, he's like, you can control, you know, however many millions of people, you understand the power that could do it. And then again, so I feel like his ambition might, you know, come back to haunt him in the third.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Because I could see it being scaled down to more of Chani, the Empress, I forget her name, a Lawrence Pugh's character, and Paul. And that dynamic being, and because they have a holy war to wage. So I don't know how much time you have to plot when you're taking over planets as you go. So I could see Den, at least from here, from Denny's, like, because we could very well go down the road of different you know, like, let's see this battle longer, or let's see here, like, more of this, a poetic interpretation of this battle, you know what I mean? But Denny just focuses on Paul, right? He could very well have established all these other lines of storytelling, but he cares about the interpersonal evolution of this character. So maybe it's going to be about the same thing in the third one, but scaled into a massive crusade across the galaxy.
I'm getting visions of, like, Paul having to take out Josh Brolin's character. You know, he does something that fucks everything up for him, or throws a wrench in his plan, and then he, like, cheerfully has to, like, just gut stab him as he dies. Like, why are you a pup?
I don't see that at all. I just see, because he's a soldier. He has war. What else does he need? You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah. There's a lot. That character doesn't need a lot just to continue
going. Yeah, because if you see, he fell in line with the Fremen the day, right? He was included with the delegation of the South, and he was kneeling of everyone.
I love that scene when Zendaya's character is giving fucking Paul shit. No, he's giving, everybody's praying.
Everybody,
right? This is how the prophecy, this is how they control us. And then he just yanks her down. He's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. And then, like, she stands up when everyone's like, no one can fight me. And he brings her back down. Like, I could see that, what you're saying. I could see it being kind of like, espionage intrigue, you know, Florence Pugh's character trying to assassinate Paul, or this Shakespearean love triangle. Like, how do you, because he has kids, like, if I remember, he has a kid with the Empress, and he has a kid with Shani at some point, and then you have the sister, another dynamic who's going to be thrown, and then where's Lady Jessica come in, and, like, how does that work? It's a lot.
I like when he uses the voice on the Mother Superior.
Oh, yeah. Like,
blasphemy.
Yeah.
Blasphemous.
Like, well, like, watch you, what do you say, Paul? Just silence. And like, my peacemaker. My pacemaker. Oh, sorry, my bad. My pacemaker. Yeah, she's a great actress. And I love her.
I feel like there is a lot to look forward to in part three. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know how much more I can handle another 3-hour movie, because I'm an old man now.
Coward.
Oh, I also went in on the sober. I'm taking a little break from weed right now, so I went yesterday sober. So maybe that also had to do with a little bit of, like, sitting there for 3 hours, and I felt it more. So.
Oh God! Look at you. Welcome back to the world of pain.
Oh, dude, you know I'm wearing this thing right now. You see this?
Oh, is that your wrist thing? Oh, yeah.
Because I have tennis elbow.
Oh, no.
So, I've always said that I have the body of a crash test dummy.
Yeah, you do. Because when I met you, like, you stood up and your knee started cracking, and I legit looked around like, did a car crash? Like, what happened? And I looked at you, and I looked up, and I looked down, and I was like, it's you.
Oh, man, it is not fun.
Yeah. So the ending. The ending bit with, it's Paul's, you know, he's the emperor now. The great houses refuse to acknowledge his ascendancy. What do you think?
Like, holy war, man. Setup. Bring it on.
Holy war.
Bring it on.
Set up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to see how the sand people would feel in the dynamic on a different planet. Like, because we had that scene in the trailer and in the movie where he's explaining to Shani his world, right? And she's like, I don't believe you. And so I would like to see, like, these people who have lived their entire lives, you know, by sand, you know, they don't like it, it's coarse, it gets in everything.
Yeah, them being in a water planet. How the hell would that work? Would they, like, jump in and start drinking, like, the gallons?
Fuck this war, there's water.
how would that work? I'm so like, down for
you.
A
mean
war.
We don't have to suck the water out of our dead anymore? Fuck, this is awesome. We could just cry?
Yeah, we could just cry. Everyone starts crying. It's just like, you're right. How would that work? How would invading planets work?
Yeah, because presumably that's what's going to have to happen, right? Because, like, the other houses, they have their fleet, but they were prohibited on landing, on threat of nuking the spice field. So at the end, when they refuse to acknowledge his ascension, he's like, well, then let them have paradise. And everybody's running towards towards the ships to go attack the houses, right? So presumably they have to mount an invasion of some sort.
Yeah. Or how would space combat work? You know, like is it like such a lull of peace that no one has developed? You know, no one has developed weaponry to combat each other in space. You know, it's
That's something that's an interesting thing. Like, what happened? Because like with spice, they have capability, like intergalactic jumping capabilities, right?
You're right.
Wouldn't you assume that with that power, you could also make some sort of weapon?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, what, drugs? A big LSD bomb?
Like, look at nuclear.
Yeah.
Look at nuclear energy, right?
Yeah.
It's a renewable source of energy, but at the same time, it's unparalleled destructive power.
Yeah. Well, they have nukes.
They do have nukes.
Yeah, they have nukes. So, I don't know. That's plain as I don't know how you can make a garnish into a weapon.
Garnish. How do they make it into a fuel source?
Yeah, that's a good idea too. Like, is it like this? There's silos of garnish, and that's how, and then they snort it, and then that's how they get the fuel. Like, I don't know.
Space all of it magic. Is imaginary. It's just them tripping. Like, they don't go anywhere. None of this shit is actually happening. They're just tripping balls.
Yeah, it's the second. Has a lot of questions that I'm excited. Just like, how does Holy War work? How is the dynamic gonna work out? Mm-hmm. How is Paul gonna become, like, because he's essentially is it absolute power corrupts absolutely? Like, how does that
be tyrant?
Yeah, how is that gonna work? Is the sister gonna kind of like level him down, kind of thing? Like, will the baby start talking outside the womb?
Fucking Guado? What's his
name? Yeah. Yeah. You know, Paul, I love you, Paul. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how does it's a lot of questions. How does combat gonna work with their swords? The shields are so advanced that they don't need projectile weapon.
Yeah, there is that those flash forward scenes from the first one, right, where it's like him, Zendaya, and like a whole other of the Fremen, like on all wearing black on that ship, right, as watching as fucking atrocities happen below them,
stuff
like that. So like, I would be interesting to see how all of that going to incorporate and wrap up the story.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, would you be interested in a Dune series?
There is gonna be. Yeah. Isn't there going to be a sisterhood, the Bene Gesserit? Yeah. Or do you mean more focused on like Paul?
No. Just to fill in the gaps, like a Bene Gesserit would be cool. You just give us more info about the other houses and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It would help with the weight. It would help with the weight. I just hope it doesn't tie in as a huge, you know, because you know tie-ins these days. Something happens in a TV show, it'll probably happen in a movie, right? It'll establish a storyline in the TV show and then will be elaborated or paid off in the movie or something like that. I hope it doesn't be like that.
It would be cool to see the story like of Atreides' grandfather from his dad's side, right? Because he was like that bullfighter, he was a rebel. Mm-hmm. Shit like that. That would be cool to see.
Yeah, that would be sick. That would be them, Lady Jessica meeting Leto as a young man. Mm-hmm. Would be totally dope. Yeah, I'm all for everything, dude. I'm about to buy the book. to be honest with you,
there's so many books.
How many are there?
I don't know, but I think there's like at least six.
I was gonna say more than five.
They're it's already too thick ass books, you know. I was actually trying to find to see if there's audio versions online.
I'm a little split on the audio stuff. Because I do want to listen to it, but I'll fall asleep. You know what I mean? So I'll be like...
I'm the opposite. Every time I've tried to read in the past, 15 years of my life, I'll just fall asleep. If there's no pictures, then it doesn't keep my attention.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that like stood out from the film to you?
No. Well, I'm curious what you'd rate it.
Yeah. So I would say the first one, I would give it like an 8.5, I think. For me, the second one is like an 8.
Oh, it lowered. You gave the first
just
one
a little
like
bit.
Like a 10, just a I little think.
Bit. It was for me, the second one is a little bit lower just because, like I said, there are so many threads in the film that they just didn't explore. And I feel like is, you know, somebody like me who enjoys the, like you said, the world building, the lore of it all. I would have loved to have seen like a little bit more, but again, it's a 3-fucking-hour movie. Like I told my girlfriend at the end, like I would like to see a director's cut.
Yeah, it's 4 hours long.
Yeah, so, like at home, yeah. You can break it up, watch it in a week and stuff like that. Don't binge it all at once. But I would like to see director's cut just because I feel like there was so much more left on the cut, on the chopping board than what we actually saw.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, I don't remember my first grade. I want to say it's in the high nines for the first one. So I think it was maybe 9.5, 9.6. And if I was to grade this movie, it would be like a 9.7, 9.8.
So just slightly above the first one.
Yeah, because my whole deal with sequels is just, you know, how do you make a step up from this? And it, for all intents and purposes, the first one established the characters, and then the second one kind of elaborated and developed them even more, and then the third one's gonna
hopefully, if it's like, I want to say the Return of the King, where like the entire movie is just a battle, right? Hopefully it's something like that.
I'm excited. It's the technological side and the fantasy side is gonna have a hard time with the third movie just because we have so many frame of references of what a space battle looks like. So I'm excited to see what Dune 3 space battle is going to look like.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Even if there is any, because I feel like they're going to be like, oh yeah, we left off with them going attacking the other house's fleets, but then we didn't see that. Or, you know, like they're already planning invasion type of shit.
Yeah, or there's not even a space battle, maybe. We'll see.
It's just implied that
happened. Well, just because look at the massive burrito-shaped ships they had. It's like massive ships to jump different galaxies. So maybe space battle is not practical where you have space battles, but there's an invasion force on your planet already. You know, I mean, like how would that work? But
It would be interesting. I also would like to see if there's any more backstory on, not necessarily Christopher Walken's Emperor, but like how the Emperor as a entity became to be. Cause like, if he rules over the galaxy, like how, what the fuck happened there? You know?
Yeah. How does that work?
Exactly. Yeah. But is there anything else that you want to touch on? That's no.
No.
No. All right, well, then let's wrap this up.
Oh, hell yeah.
I've been your host, like always, Joel, accompanied by my good buddy.
Hey, Ernesto, me. Hey, Ernesto. Hello. And if you want to contact us, check out our link tree. Email us your questions, topics. If there's any feedback, just go ahead and reach us out there. And of course, give us a rating review. It really helps us with the show.
We'll catch you next week on Pop Salsa.